Avraham, his very name means father, father of the Jewish people, father of mankind. He is the great revolutionary. Well, what was the nature of his revolution? To understand this, we have to understand the nature of the world before and really identify in a deep, poignant fashion what that vacuum was before Avraham Avinu. It was quite literally a vacuum. Chazal speak about Alpayim Tohu, the 2,000 years before Avraham discovered Hashem, are years of Tohu, years of a vacuum, years of no spiritual productivity in the world. The Averis being committed during that time were not coincidental, a coincidental litany of Averis. This generation sinned this way, that generation sinned that way. No. Before Avraham Avinu, there were overarching patterns of Alpayim Tohu, overarching patterns of destructive behavior, undermining of Hashem's creation to make it a period of Tohu. And you see this very clearly in the Mishnah novels. Asara doros me adam va noach da 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 chakol ha doros hayu machis nuvan achev hevi akadosh baruch hu es me amabel. There were 10 generations from Adam till Noach, which made Hashem progressively madder until he brought the Mabel. The Mabel was a reaction not only to the generation of the flood, but to all the 10 sinful generations going back to Adam, which were making Hashem progressively madder in a continuous pattern of misbehavior. And likewise in the 10 generations which followed, Asara Doros Minofar Avram Dat Shakola Doros Hayamachisnu Van Achaba Avram Avinu. The Doros Minoch to Avram were making Hashem progressively madder until Avram came along. It's a 10 generation pattern. 10 generations from Adam till Noach, which apparently had one form of corrosive behavior, and 10 generations from Noach to Avram, which apparently had a different pattern of corrosive behavior. And we cannot understate just how corrosive their behavior was. In a certain sense, it's as though the very world was undermined. And this is apparent in the terminology of Chazal we used before, we cited before, Alpayim Tohu. These were 2,000 years of Tohu, desolation. Tohu describes the pre-Bria world, Va'aretz Haisa Tohu Vavo, the world pre-creation. Well, spiritually speaking, the 2,000 years before Avram, though humanity existed, they brought the world back to desolation. That is the echo of that phrase, calling human societies, the human societies of early men, days of desolation, as much as the world has been created and seemed to move on from the desolation of Aretz Yisrael Tohu Vavohu. No, spiritually speaking, they brought the world back to Tohu Vavohu. And from this perspective, I would suggest the greater pattern of the Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos Perek Hey, beginning with Asara Ma'amaros Nivra Ha'olam, the world was created with 10 utterances, and it says the significance of the 10 utterances is to teach us Lihipara Min HaRasham Shama Abdin Asa Olam Shnivra Pa'asara Ma'amaros, to teach us just how horrible the Rasham, evil people are that undermine the 10 utterances of creation. Here the Tana begins with the notion of 10 utterances, with a focus on evil people who undermine those 10 utterances and destroy Hashem's world. And then it continues with the Mishnayos we cited, describing the 10 generations from Adam till Noach and the 10 generations from Noach to Avram who were sinful, implying via pattern, beginning with a 10, the 10 utterances of creation, and continuing on with these 10 sums, the evil 10 of from Adam till Noach, and the evil 10 from Noach till Avram, implying there is a connection, a correlation here. As Mefarshim note, the Tana is linking up 10s and linking up 10s in an inverse generation direction. The 10 positives of the 10 utterances of creation were undermined by the 10 negatives, the 10 negative generations from Adam till Noach, the 10 negatives of 10 generations from Noach to Avram, and this is this linkage is further solidified when you appreciate that the opening statement of Tensums, the Ten Utterances of Creation, focused on the potential for Rishon to destroy creation. It said, why are we taught about Hashem's Ten Utterances? To tell us how horrible it is, Rishon, who undermined Hashem's Ten Utterances. I am suggesting that that is really an intro to the very next statements. Oh, you know who Rishon, who destroyed the Ten Utterances of creation, were? These sinful two cycles of 10 generations. Right? You hear the Hemshech of the Mishnayos. And regarding the 10 generations from Adam to Noach, the notion of man's sinful behavior undermining creation is very explicit. Hashem brought the waters of the Mabul, which literally destroyed creation. So here we have it in our pattern in Pirkei Avos. It was Tohu. It was these generations so undermined Hashem's creation and so snuffed out spiritual productivity from Hashem's creation. It was as though brought back to the pre-Bria world. But what was it about these 10 generations' sinful behavior? They were evil, they sinned, but no. As we said, there seems to be a unified spiral. 10 generations from Adam till Noah who made Hashem progressively matter. 10 generations from Noah till Avram who made Hashem progressively matter. What was the theme of each respective 10 sons' behavior, which in turn Avram Avinu had to correct and revolutionize? So you recall in last week's shiur, we discussed that the 10 generations from Adam till Noah, there is a cohesive pattern. Beginning with Adam and Gan Eden, who undermined the notion of sacred physicality. As we developed last week, Hashem created a world where the physical reflects the spiritual. His Ten Utterances of creation, the emanation of the divine, are clothed in a physical world which will be beautiful. And through engaging and basking in the physical pleasures of this world, one will be in a consummately holy place, in touch with the soul of creation, the Ten Utterances. And this is why not only the world itself, the Olam Gadol, but the Olam Katan, the human being, Pri-Chet Eitz Hadas, was a symbiosis of body and soul. His body was sacred just like his soul, imbued with the eternal nature of the soul to live forever. However, the sin of Adam brought about a debasing of the body. Now suddenly physicality appears separate from spirituality. The body now is stigmatized. They see themselves as naked and debased on a physical level. The body will now die and depart from the soul. And likewise, Hashem's creation, the body of Hashem's Ten Utterances, no longer reflects those Ten Utterances. No longer can man live in Gan Eden and bask in Hashem and in Torah through Eden, through the physical world, but now he needs to relate to those Ten Utterances in a distant, intellectual way. Torah, Aseres HaDibros, instead of Asar Ma'amar, the soul, the utterances without the body. It is a world where body has been removed from soul. And we traced last week how all of the 10 generations culminating in Dar HaMabul completed this cycle of debasing the body. The Dar HaMabul animalized themselves. As we traced last week from the Lashon Basar, flesh, which appeared so many times in the Mabul story, Kates Kol Basar, and approximately 15 other related psukim, Hashem was declaring war on the flesh and the whole notion of an animalized body. And Hashem and the Mabul, we understand from this perspective, destroyed the physical world. The 10 utterances, the 10 sacred utterances in which Hashem expressed himself, no longer had a body to enter, had a viable physical world to enter. And even though there is a post-Mabul, the physical world and the human body are never the same, as we studied from Chazal last week. They are much more feeble. Lifespan is much shorter after the Mabul because the physical body is also distant from the soul. We have to learn this lesson and gravitate to the soul and intellectualism, so to speak, neshama, malach, instead of physicality. Well, I'm going to suggest moving on from the 10 generations of Adam, from Adam till Noach, to the 10 generations from Noach till Avram. Indeed, it's a world now not of body, but of intellect. And that is exactly the problem. Human knowledge and human wisdom is a blessing and at the same time a curse. Sometimes we become too smart for ourselves. We become arrogant and we develop hubris. And that is exactly what happened in these 10 generations. It's not a coincidence that the culmination of these 10 generations, which began with morality, humanity, everything reflected by Zion mitzvahs, the seven Noahide laws. And as we studied last week, these laws were first formalized, though most of them existed before, but they were first formalized in the days of Noah, right? The notion of morality, rules and regulations. Well, that's how they began. And how do they culminate? With the Dar Haflaga, the generation of the tower, which warred against Hashem. I'm going to suggest the gall of man, the hubris of man to battle the divine, is specifically because the focus of these 10 generations was on the glorification of man. Because the new spiritual focus after the Mabul was that we not debase ourselves to the animal level. After all, in the generation post-flood, man was supposed to dominate the animals now. Man was allowed to kill animals. It was a period of elevating man and morality, everything Zion Mitzvah says. Well, that brought about, though it was a blessing, it brought about the curse of human hubris. Migdal Bavel is the Noach tensum gone astray. Shocking as it is to say about a great man like Noach that his revolution of morality and humanity could go awry, it's true. As provocatively reflected by the Lashon of the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Asara Doros Mi Noach Bar Avram, Shekol HaDoros Hayim Achisen Obam. All those 10 generations implied even Noach were part of this cycle of spiritual devolution. Even Noach, righteous as he was, brought about spiritual devolution. How could that be? As with every great man, the failings are not despite greatness, but are based on a misappropriation of that greatness. Noach introduced morality in the world, humanity in the world, and human dignity. Well, the problem was, without a submission towards the divine, humanity and the glorification of man breeds hubris, breeds Migdal Bavel. And just to appreciate how hubris is the issue here, I want you to appreciate the Pshuto Shemekra, the simple read of the Pesukim regarding Migdal Bavel. It never says explicitly that they sought to ascend the heavens and battle with Hashem. It doesn't say that. What it says is like this. It says they were engaged in a great construction project. It says, Vayomu ishal reyehu, hava nilvana novena v'nisrael esreifa. Let's make bricks. Vati alavena la'avim v'achemer hayo la'am l'chomer. There was a fixation on making bricks and mortar. And then it says, Vayomu hava nilvana iru migdal v'rosho b'shamayim. It sounds like it was now a second step to this proposal. Let's not only make bricks and mortar, let's actually build a city and a tower. Again, these two are phrased as two phases. First, the making of bricks, and only then the idea to build a tower. Because the making of bricks was within itself an accomplishment, i.e. a human initiative, human creativity, make new inventions such as bricks. And then a second phase, do something with those building blocks. Build a city, a tower, v'nasalanu shem, to make a name for ourselves. There was, in the Pshuto Shel Mikra, a sense here of human development in terms of both in phase A, the making of bricks, i.e. invention, and in phase B, using that invention and the notion of human ingenuity to affirm their very humanity. V'nasu lanu shein. We human beings are capable of great things as reflected by our achievements. The unity of that tower was really a marshalling of all the disparate, all the uniqueness of different human families coming together in this great display of human achievement. That's all it says in the Pasuk. And for some reason, Hashem was very offended by this, the Pasuk says, and sought to break it. It doesn't say explicitly they sought to battle Hashem. Explicitly they sought simply to engage in human progress and to revel in human achievement. But Chazal are telling us, when they midrashically explain they were warring with God and seeking to go up to the heaven to battle with Hashem, Chazal are telling us that latent in a hubris of human endeavor, a reveling in human endeavor, not seeing human endeavor as a means to a spiritual end, but as an end, is a war against Hashem, is conceptually speaking, an effort to ascend the heavens and war with Hashem. So this is why the 10 generations from Noach to Avram come together as a cohesive group. It did not begin from a bad place, the 10 generations from Noach to Avram, as we're explaining. It emerges from the Noach revolution, the focus on our humanity and our dignity over the animals. But it went awry. Too much humanism, too much intellectualism without submission to the divine can go awry. And this understanding breathes meaning into several statements of Chazal. Let's begin with the perplexing Medrash regarding Migdal Bavel, which Rashi cites, which says on one level, they made a calculation. X amount of years after creation, the mabul happened, and the sky as though fell. Well, the sky is gonna fall again. The time has come yet for another mabul. So this building project is seen as building a support for the heavens so it doesn't fall again in a second mabul. Now this chazal, this the sky is falling chazal, it's very hard to deal with superficially. Were they really so crazy that they saw the mabul as this structural problem within creation, which human beings can be successful at band-aiding by building structures, and they really believe the structures would go so high that they could support the heavens? It sounds almost comical. Of course, Chazal are portraying a deeper idea beyond the superficial here. I believe Chazal are portraying a deep idea. These were great men, after all, clearly with great prowess and ability to achieve in the structural and building arena, while no less in the moral arena. I think what they were saying is like this. They were saying, hey, think about the mabul and what happened at the time of the mabul. The mabul was a time of human debasement. Humans became like the animals, and the sky fell. You know what that means? At the time of the mabul, it says, Arubas Hashamayim Niftachu, the skylights of heaven opened. It rained so much that it seemed as though there were no heavens anymore, and the waters above the heavens, the Mayim Elyonim, flowed right down. You know what that symbolizes? There was no concept of heaven anymore. Man was so animalized, there was no concept of heaven, of higher aspirations. The Mekubalim say that the heavens represent our ability to perceive the heavens, represents man's aspiration towards something higher, towards the heavens. And that's why the heavens are called Shamayim, from the word Sham, there. The sense of there, man is aspiring towards heaven, to that great realm that's beyond. While an animalized Dar HaMabul had no concept of heaven anymore. They sunk to the animal level instead of aspiring to higher levels. No heavens. The very heavens collided. Well, the Dar HaFlug, on the other hand, believed by marshaling humanity, human endeavor, human initiation, we're going to support those heavens when they threaten to fall anymore. In other words, we are going to prevent the devolution of man to animal level, man losing his higher aspirations, reflected by the heavens falling. No concept of higher aspirations. We're going to protect against that by engagement in great human initiatives as reflected by the tower. That is the deeper meaning of this chazal. And I would suggest that this is also the understanding behind the chazal, which says that the place where the tower was built, Shinar, or Sumer, as it's translated, the place in Mesopotamia where they built the tower, can be read Shaninru Sham, Shinar Shaninru Sham Mesei Marble. The corpses of the marble fell down there, settled down there. Now, what is the significance of the residue of the marble, the bodies that were destroyed in the marble, sinking down to that valley in Mesopotamia where the Migdol is built, the tower is built? There must be some conceptual meaning, otherwise it wouldn't be marked in Torah. Well, appreciating that the Migdol Bava was not at its root entirely evil. It was the Noach initiative of working against the marble, propping up humanity to no longer be animalistic in reveling in human accomplishment. But that great endeavor gone awry. Well, they were building a Migdol conceptually upon the corpses of the marble. They were seeking to build upon the destruction of the marble and make something more enduring. A human community which aspires to revel in our highest aspirations, intellectualism, human progress, and the like. So here we have it. The 10 generations from Adam till Noach, they destroyed the body. The 10 generations from Noach to Avram, they destroyed the mind or the soul. To put it another way, right? Hashem created the world with 10 utterances. We said that is, so to speak, the soul of creation, and the body of creation is the creation itself, the universe itself. Well, the 10 generations culminating with Dar HaMabul, they animalized themselves, they destroyed the actual creation, the physical creation which was destroyed in the Mabul. The Dar HaFlug, on the other hand, they corrupted the notion of the human mind, the human soul, and correspondingly, they removed Hashem from the picture. They removed the 10 utterances, the soul of creation, from the creation. And that is the significance of the pattern which we traced before in Avos, that the Asar Mamaros Nivra Ha'olam is then followed by these two ten sums of sinful generations. They were undermining the 10 sum of creation. Both the physical creation itself, which the 10 generations from Adam until Noah undermined, and then the soul of creation, which the 10 generations from Noah till Avram undermined, by undermining the notion of intellectualism and a soul. But here comes the great revolutionary, Avram. Avram was a reaction to the Migdol Bavel. Avram taught the world that yes, you could be an intellectual. Yes, you must be an intellectual in the post-Noach revolution. You could be an intellectual, but not lose yourself in human hubris. Submit to the divine. It is quite apparent that Avram's Hikaras Boru, Avram's discovery of monotheism, is the direct counterpoint to the Migdol Bavel and what that represents in terms of, conceptually speaking, humans warring against God, potentially denying God, apikarsis. Avram is the counterpoint towards apikarsis. He recognizes Hashem. And Avram teaches us a finding Hashem through intellectualism, because Avram was the first religious scientist or religious cosmologist. He found Hashem through in-depth study of the world, as Chazal say. Avram was an intellectual, but an intellectual who found Hashem through his intellectualism. Because the highest human understanding reflects a higher world, a mysterious world. In a certain sense, the greatest human knowledge is to know that there is something which can't be quantified. Through the study of anything, physics, psychology,
it becomes apparent that at the end of the day, things don't fully make sense. There is something beyond, there's something behind it all called the God factor. It is specifically through our knowledge that we arrive at the place of understanding there is something above knowledge. And this is articulated by many Jewish thinkers in variant expressions, whether most recently Reb Nachman of Breslov, Tachlis Hadas Leida, Shaloneida, the epitome of knowledge is to know that we don't know, or in the expression of the Rabbeinu Bachai in the Chovos HaVavashar HaYichud, Kasher Yagia HaAdam Al Kseh HaSagaso Yakir Chesrono V'Yavin Ki Yevsher Lamod. Right? When a person reaches the epitome of knowledge, he realizes his own limitations. Such clarity, such profundity of human knowledge leads to the realization of just how limited we are. To use the words of the Maral of Prague, Nesiva Solom, Nesiva Torah, Perek Tes, Ki Asagas HaEmes Hi, Biyadiyah She'ena Tamasik. The epitome of true knowledge is to know that we can't know. So in a sense, Avram, who grew up in Bavel, he was a Mesopotamian. He grew up in that region. He took their mita of human inquiry, human knowledge, to the next level. And this explains why, as we'll trace soon, on one hand, Avram rejects the Mesopotamian culture around him. But on the other hand, Avram is so deeply identified with the Mesopotamian culture. His very name, at least his first name, Avram, we're taught, is from the roots Av la'Aram, the father of Aram. He's a paternal figure. He identifies with the local culture as much as he rejects it. You know why? Because everything they believed, humanism, intellectualism, human progress, he takes it to the next level. He says, you guys, your virtue of being understanding human beings, well, you have a self-imposed ceiling in believing all the answers have to be found within man and within human comprehension, and you can't ascend higher. That you people in Bavel, on one hand, in building of your tower, you sought to reassert the heavens, as we study midrashically. You're building pillars to support the heavens against a marble, i.e. you want to find that reality called heavens, the higher aspirations of man. But on the other hand, Chazal also described them as seeking to war against Hashem in the heavens, meaning this higher realm of heavens, which they seek to buttress, is a heavens devoid of God. It's a human concept of heaven. It's higher aspirations of Hashem. Well, says Avram, that is an offensive notion. That's ultimately not even a smart or wise notion. And we begin to understand Avram now as the counterpoint to the people of Aram. He's a local. He is raised with our intellectual culture, but Gufa, he uses the intellectual heritage which he grew up in to reject the local culture. And this is why it is not a coincidence that Chazal speak in terms of Avram's theological debates with Nimrod. He duels with the king of Mesopotamia, Nimrod. Nimrod, who is also associated as the primal mover behind the building of the Migdal Bavel, is also Avram's nemesis. Avram is fighting with Nimrod on everything Nimrod represented in Migdal Bavel. He's warring against a false notion of human progress and human intellectualism, that it means human intellectualism removed from God, which is ultimately not true intellectualism, not an intellectualism which is pointing at the ultimate cause which lies beyond human conception. And there are further magnificent patterns to be traced here in terms of Avram's relationship to the Migdal Bavel. And perhaps we don't generally think that way, that Avram's war with Nimrod was not Avram's theological war with Nimrod, was really a war with the Migdal Bavel and the culture of Migdal Bavel and everything the 10 generations going back to Noach represented. Let's understand, for example, the place where Avram lived and warred with Nimrod. It's called Ur Kasdim. Now, Chazal give many meanings to Ur Kasdim. One of them, they say, Ur, which Rashically means a fire, right? Yashin Ur. That is the furnace in which Avram was cast into by Nimrod when he rejected Nimrod's idols, and which he miraculously survived. Well, follow this pattern with me. Later we find, when Avram intervenes to save Sodom and other kingdoms, five kingdoms from four kings, well, one of those kings who Avram is protecting, one of those five victim kings he's protecting, the king of Sodom, falls into a pit of mortar, we are told in Parshas Vayera, and he survives. And Chazal say the king of Sodom surviving the pit of mortar was supposed to underscore the truth of a miracle which happened much earlier when Hashem saved Avram from the furnace of Ur Kasdim. Some people doubted that miracle. Was Avram Avinu really saved from the furnace of Ur Kasdim? Do miracles happen? They said, ha ha ha, look, miracles happen. Decades later, the king of Sodom, who Avram was saving, was saved from pits of mortar when he was fleeing the four kings. Now, on the face of it, it seems very, very disjointed. What connection is there between the furnace Avram was saved from, the pit of mortar which the king of Sodom was saved from? It just happens to be a miracle. Well, hold on. For starters, the king of Sodom, whom Avram was saving, and we could see as a sidekick of Avram, was being chased and pursued by whom? The four kings, at their head a king named Amraphel, whom Rashi B'Shem Chazal says is Nimrod. Amraphel means Omar Pol. He told Avram fall. Omar Pol, he's told Avram fall into the Kibshon HaEsh. Realize that Amraphel, the nemesis of the king of Sodom, is being identified as Nimrod, and Nimrod in his personification of Omar Pol telling Avram to jump in the furnace. But not only that. Notice that in that story of the king of Sodom in the pit, he's in a pit of mortar. Mortar was, of course, the symbolic creation of the Migdal Bavel, which Nimrod was behind. They initiated mortar, chemer, into the world, as we read in Parshas Noach. You see how the pieces are coming together here? I believe Chazal, in this Midrashic read, are conflating the miracle of Avram in Nimrod's furnace and the miracle of his sidekick, the king of Sodom, whom he's saving in Amraphel's pit of mortar, because they want the furnace of Nimrod and the pit of mortar to collide, because they want us to appreciate that original furnace in which Nimrod's throwing Avram to should, in your mind's eye, also be a pit of mortar, i.e. also reflect the Migdal Bavel and the creative endeavor of the Migdal Bavel. Avram was warring with Nimrod against the entire culture of building and human initiation, a culture of human initiative devoid of God. And let's study another pattern from that perspective, another midrashic pattern in which we see Avram's tussling with Nimrod is really a tussling against Migdal Bavel and the false notion of intellectualism and human endeavor. Ur Kasdim has another meaning to it. Rashi in Parshas Noach says that Ur mi lashon bika, Ur means a valley. Ur Kasdim means the valley of the Kasdim, the valley of Mesopotamia. Well, hold on. What else in Mesopotamia was a valley? Shinar. It says the place of the tower was a valley in Mesopotamia. Is it a coincidence that Ur Kasdim, meaning the valley of the Babylonians, as per this read of Rashi, there's a valley in Mesopotamia where Avram stares down Nimrod. There's a valley in Mesopotamia where the Migdal is built. The correlation is, when Avram was staring down Nimrod in a valley in Mesopotamia, he was really staring down everything in valleys in Mesopotamia, including the Migdal Bavel itself. Avram was rejecting Migdal Bavel and the false notion of human initiative. Many, many other indicators to this connection. For example, the statement of the Ramchal that Hashem chose Avram Avinu in a certain sense at the time of Migdal Bavel, or the statement of the Medrash Rabbah in our Parsha, Parshas Lech Lecha, which derives from a verse in Yirmiyahu, which says, Izivu v'neilachish. La'artso, Bavel was rejected and someone left. It reads, Izivu b'dar haflaga v'neilachish me'artso. That is Avram leaving Mesopotamia. It seems to correlate Avram's leaving Mesopotamia to a rejection of dar haflaga. Avram was really rejecting the dar haflaga when he moved on from Mesopotamia. And you even have indicators in the chronology and in the history. Various of the historical Midrashi Chazal teach that Avram turned 48 and recognized Hashem the very year that the Migdal Bavel was built. If you put the history, the chronology together, it says at age 48, Avram Avinu recognized Hashem, and that exactly correlates to the year of the Migdal Bavel. Because on many levels, right? From what we traced that Avram is staring down Nimrod, the primal mover, to what we traced about the furnace of Avram correlated to a pit of mortar in the Migdal Bavel, to what we traced about a valley in both the Avram against Nimrod and the Migdal Bavel stories, to the time Avram was chosen and the statement of the Ramchal and the historical Midrashim, and now this Medrash and Lech Lecha, Avram was rejecting the Migdal Bavel. But herein we have the irony. He's rejecting on so many levels the Migdal Bavel, but yet he's a local. Avram is inherently a Babylonian. So often, and this is a human truth, a funny truth, everything we fight with, everything we tussle with, is our own heritage. People know this. So often people reject exactly the issues of their family, characteristics of their family, which define them. You'll see this happening again and again. A person hates something in their parents, which they have in themselves, right? I say that in just as a human truth. But Avram was not an outsider to Babylonia. Avram was a local Babylonian, and as we said before, he is not a periphery figure, right? Divorced from his local culture. He is Av La'aram. Avram means Av La'aram. He personifies the local culture, because you know what really happened? Avram said, I believe in everything you guys represent as the 10th generation from Noach, the new era of human progress. I believe in intellectualism, but you got intellectualism wrong. You haven't taken intellectualism to the next level. True intellectualism is tachlis hadas leida shelo neida. You are unable to discover the God factor. You believe that all wisdom has to point to humanity. You are not true intellectuals. I am the ultimate Babylonian. I know what true intellectualism is. You guys don't, and that's why he's the Av La'aram. He fathers everything Aram is and takes it to the next level. And how beautiful from this perspective, the read of the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Asar doros minoch v'ar Avram, shakol doros ha'yimechisen upam atcha Avram, pa Avram avinu v'kibol schar kulam. You know what Avram's reward is? He gets the reward which those 10 generations from Noach till Avram will get. Very interesting concept. Avram's reward is the reward which really the 10 generations from Noach to Avram should have gotten. If they would have done their job, if they would have used the notion of human intellectualism properly, they would have been Avram's. The natural outgrowth of human intellectualism is to be Hikar Esboro. Whenever we find in Chazal this concept about a tzaddik taking the chelik of a rasha, it means he is actualizing what the rasha should have actualized. Avram was everything which the 10 generations from Noach to Avram should have been in this new age of intellectualism. Not human hubris, but tachlis hadas leida shaloneita, and to be hence Hikar Esboro. And how magnificent from this perspective, a Medrash Rabbah in this week's Parsha, right in the beginning of Parsha's Lech Lecha, which cites a pasuk in Kohelis, HaChachma tolls l'chacha me'asar shlitim. Wisdom empowers a chacham more than 10 rulers. Says the Medrash, you know what this means? Avram's wisdom empowered him more than the 10 generations from Noach to Avram. Notice how the Medrash sees Avram's apexing of the 10 generations in terms of his wisdom beating out their rulership. Now we understand, they were rulers. They were human aristocrats in an age of humanism, castigating the Dar HaMabel and the animalizing of man, glorifying human achievement. They were definitely Shlitim, Asara Shlitim. But Avram was even stronger in the realm of wisdom. Ha-chachma taz l'chachmei asara shlitam b'yir. Avram took wisdom to the next level to recognize the God factor in all of us, right? All of us know that at the end of the day, there is so much mystery in life. Embrace the mystery. Don't try to make sense out of it, because any answers to the great human conundrums in life, the meaning of life, an explanation of human suffering, ultimately don't justify it. There is a hubris in the attempt to be human about everything and to give human answers about everything. In a sense, it's the Migdal Bavel, right? Accept the mystery called the God factor, called the Hikar Esboro. In the past, we've traced how when the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah discusses the story of Avram recognizing Hashem, again and again he uses the word das. If you look at Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Perek, Aleph, Halachos, Dalet, and Hey, I'll just read you a few of the expressions describing Avram's finding of Hashem and teaching it to the world. He again and again uses the word das. Hischil Loshet Bedaito, Avram started to use his das to look for the origin of the world. He even has Kavat Sedek Midaito, and then he says, V'yada sheyesh aloka, and then he says, V'yada shekol ha'olam tom, he knew everyone was mistaken, and he knew that what happened in the world was, Ad she'ibda hadas midaitam, everyone else made a mistake in their knowledge, V'kivin sheker V'yada, once he knew this truth, he taught it to the world, and then he says, Gavar aleim bedaito, he won every theological battle with his das, and then V'yada sheyesh derech emes, he knew there was a truth. And then he says, V'kivin shegavar bedaito. And then he says, he taught the world V'yadu, they knew that there was a Hashem. Notice that again and again, this is a pattern in the Rambam. There's almost an echo in this Rambam regarding Avram. He sees Avram's discovery of Hashem as a das discovery. It's wisdom, it's das or chachma. Avram is the ultimate intellect, the God phenomenon rather than the secularist model of Dar HaFlaka. That is the wisest position. That's why Avram is the Av La'aram. He is the greatest humanist, recognizing there is something beyond the human being. And this is not unique to Avram. If I may be so reverent to say, the Babylonian model of Migdal Bavel defines who we are as a Klal Yisrael beyond Avram. Avram's Babylonian origin forever defines him and defines us, because the Babylonian model is not per se bad, as we've been discussing. It's gone awry, the glorification of human intellectualism, because when it hasn't been taken to its highest form, which is to recognize the mystery in life, the God phenomenon. But that's what Avram Avinu does. Listen to this. This is why, even when Avram Avinu's name changes from Avram to Avraham, and Avram, which means Av La'aram, becomes father of Aram, becomes Avraham, Avhamun Gayim, as Rashi points out, the resh is not dropped. Avhamun Gayim should be Avham, his final name, but yet the resh remains as a residual from his original name. That is because Avram never loses his identification with Aram. You know why? Aram and his origin, Migdal Bavel, and the 10 generations from Noach to Avram, intellectualism is Avram's Mesorah. He gets it right where they get it wrong. That's why Klal Yisrael has a great future in Bavel. Not only Avram, but his descendant Yaakov is going to be exiled there, and Rashi highlights in Parshas Chayisar that even as Avram is saying, my son Yitzchak may not go down to Babylonia, Rak b'ni al tashuv shama, he is really saying, Avol ben b'ni chozer shama, he's acknowledging for all of his protection of Yitzchak not entering Babylonia, he knows it's inevitable, there will be progeny who will end up in Babylonia, and on some sense it's not only Yaakov, but it's Klal Yisrael and Gullus Bavel, which produced the greatest intellectual accomplishments of Klal Yisrael, Talmud Bavli. And it's not a coincidence that the ability for human beings to be creative and audacious, and you might even say, if we can be so bold, war with God, but not in a denying of Hashem way, right? To have the gumption and the gall to Nitzchuni Banai, as Chazal put it, to take apart the divine law, everything the Talmud Bavli is. That comes from Migdal Bavel, and Avram is the purification thereof. And even Migdal Bavel, the notion of Migdal Bavel, which was Pirat and Machlokas, Hashem mixed up their languages. Well, that is the source of Machlokas in the Talmud Bavli, and that when we're truly intellectual, we see things from different perspectives, but we use it the right way. All of that emerges from Avram Avinu's Tikkun of Migdal Bavel. So here what we have in terms of our development of Avram Avinu vis-a-vis the previous generations from this meta view, from this panoramic view today is, right, if you want to really sum it up, the first generations from Noach, from Adam until Noach, they animalized man. So there was a counter-reaction in the 10 generations from Noach to Avram to elevate man, as reflected by the Migdal Bavel and great intellectual prowess and human invention, but that went awry in terms of the hubris of man. Comes back Avram and he says, I will teach you true humanism, true intellectualism. The most progressive place to be is to recognize the mystery of life, albeit Hashem. So we are the highest humanity, the highest and the rectified form of Migdal Bavel. Well, what is the lesson here? This great truth, Tachlis hadas leida shelo neida. Humility does not contradict greatness. Humility is the most elevated place in the human condition. And humility is not the place of being a doormat or a schlepper. It is the dignified place of I understand things. I understand life like Avram to the greatest degree. And therefore I recognize not only human limitation, but that human limitation points at something more beautiful and more brilliant than even the human mind can wrap its head around. And that is Hashem. And the lesson, my friends, is embrace the mystery of life. Not only the mysteries of the physical world, but the mysteries of the human condition. So often, people bear out their soul. Life doesn't make sense. The suffering of my life doesn't make sense. The rejections which I've experienced don't make sense. My life story doesn't make sense. Well, don't make sense out of it. Embrace everything that doesn't make sense in your life as the great mystery, which is the beauty that lies beyond the Hashem factor. That is the humble but ennobling position. The greatest knowledge is that we don't know, i.e. there is something beautiful beyond. And that is the greatest legacy of Avram. May we all be zochah to live that way.